Hey, y'all. Okay, before we get into the episode, I want to tell y'all about a panel I am going to be speaking at. Pew Research did this massive study about the realities, challenges, and joys of LGBTQ plus families today. And I am so honored to be joining the 19th News and Pew Research on this panel with other amazing panelists, one of whom is Jose Rolon, NYC gay dad, who I have interviewed before. It's going to be awesome. Orion Rumler, an LGBTQ plus reporter for the 19th. Rachel Minkin, who is a research associate at Pew Research Center. And Luce, who works at Family Equality. It's going to be an awesome panel. Please come join me. It's June 26th in DC. Check the show notes. Look it up, see if you can come, and I would love to see y'all at this panel where I'm going to speak. It's going to be freaking awesome. Okay, let's get to the episode, but yay, queer families, let's go. Hey, queer fam, an announcement here. If you're in NYC or anywhere close by, mark your calendars. On Friday, June 28th at 12 p.m., that's 2025, that's this year, the Queer Family Podcast is teaming up with Sugar Mouse NYC and our friends over at Gays with Kids and GWK Academy to throw our very first Pride Family Meetup. And y'all are all invited. Let's go. This is a family-friendly Pride party made just for us. There's a full bar for the grown-ups. There are arcade games and activities for the kiddos. And wait for it, a drag story hour with the fabulous Ms. Jade. It's all going down at Sugar Mouse on the Lower East Side. You can RSVP using the link in the show notes. And of course, the link is all over my socials too. So come, connect, celebrate, and let's build our queer parenting village and celebrate this super resilient and fabulous community. I will see you there. Let's go. Let's party. It's time. This episode and the entire year of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You're going to go make the babies and then come talk to me about them.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
You know, people now talk about neurodivergence as being like really promoting the concept, which is a true one, that it's just it's a different way of being. It doesn't make it, you know, bad. And mm-hmm. That's what people do, is they take something that's different and they turn it into something scary and bad. And once you get to know somebody, unless they're a mean, horrible person, whatever, whoever they are, then they're like, why not celebrate them? That's what I don't understand. Like, why is there so much hatred right now of people that all they want to do is love and be loved and be taken, you know, be accepted for who the authentic selves that they are? That's mm-hmm. what everybody wants. So, what, you know, like, there's plenty of people, if you want to hate people, you know, there's people causing, you know, violence and horrible things in the world, all over the world, including our government. And, you know, like, why do they target? I mean, everybody's question, like, why target trans and non-binary people or lesbian and gay people for anything?
Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. The show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA plus families in all of our beautiful identities is here for another episode this week. Because, y'all, it's the Pride Extravaganza, which means not only are you getting one episode of Queer Family Goodness per week, you're getting two, one on Monday and one on Thursday, because it's Pride Bishas and we get to celebrate and we should celebrate and we need to amplify our voices and our lives and our relationships and our love and our families to the rooftops. Can I get an amen? And so today's episode is a really special one. I interviewed this person back in season 13, in episode 2. The episode was titled What DeSantis Fears. And it's all about the work and the activism and the pure badassery this person has brought to the world for the past 30 years. It's Peggy Gillespie. I recently got reacclaimed with Peggy at the Family Equality Gala, where they were honoring her for her years of work for the LGBTQIA community. With an award, she said a speech, and I thought, you know what, Peggy, come back on here. Let's hear what you're up to now, and let's hear what new badassery you're bringing to the table in terms of amplifying our entire community. And she amplifies our entire community. And I'm talking about all the intersections within our community. I feel like we need a lot more Peggy's in the world and a lot less of what we see in government lately. And that's it. You're going to love this conversation. And everybody, just happy Pride Month. I hope you're having a wonderful month. I am, despite the fact that my 7-year-old recently told me he hates Pride. I say this all the time. These little kids come out the kids they are, and he's 7, and he's in the place where he's trying to show his, take some authority, I think. And just because I wanted to read a Pride book, he decided he was going to say, you know, I don't like Pride. I'm not reading that book anymore. But it's just, you know, 7-year-olds being 7-year-old. But that's why these stories are so important. So we can keep giving all the folks out there the tools and how to talk to our kids about our beautiful families and how to show our kids and the world how important these conversations are and how important it is to celebrate and uplift every single identity out there, which you're going to hear in this conversation. There's so much more talk about that. And I need to stop talking because I want to get to rolling the tape because you don't want to hear me yammering on. But everybody, put a little thought up into the universe that my son decides he likes Pride again. Because it's a big deal in this house, as you can imagine. All right, Helen, Beulah, they're working on Orion too, my fake assistants. They're working on the 7-year-old to get him to like Pride too. They got Pride beads all over. They got rainbows all over the house. It's just crazy. They're not even real. But that's how I imagine they would be. Anyway, all right, Helen, Beulah, Gerson, please roll that tape. Let's go. Enjoy Peggy's episode.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hey, I'm stand-up comedian Ophira Eisenberg, and I am mom to a very spirited 9-year-old and host of Parenting is a Joke. Each week, I talk to comedians and celebrities about what it's like to raise kids while keeping your career afloat. There is no parenting advice here, okay? Just hilarious stories from the chaos of everyday life, from school drop-offs to airport meltdowns and everything in between. We're all figuring it out. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. Subscribe to Parenting is a Joke wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you ever feel like you entered parenthood completely overwhelmed and underprepared? Yeah, me too. Hi, I'm Rachel, and I'm your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we literally talk about all the things that no one told us before we had kids, and we let you in on the things that you really should have known about. Everything from navigating postpartum anxiety to mastering the art of making mom friends, and from introducing solids to tackling tantrums and potty training, we truly cover it all. And whether you're a first-time parent or a seasoned pro, this podcast is a go-to resource for honest advice, relatable stories, and plenty of laughs along the way. So join me and our guests each week on No One Told Us to feel less alone and more empowered.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Jamie.
It is a pleasure to have you back on the show. I am in awe of you. I'm inspired by you. And I'm so happy that you wanted to come back.
Well, I loved being with you and also meeting you at the big Family Equality Gala and getting to dance together, which was
yes.
A treat.
You know, I will always be on the dance floor. Yes, yes. Peggy, I will always be on the dance floor. But okay, so let's just, because I want to go into the Family Equality honor you just had and all the things, but let's have our 30-second elevator pitch just to start us off. So the folks at home who didn't listen to your previous episode, and if you haven't listened to our previous episode, you need to go listen to it right after this one, because it's a good one, can know who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. On your mark, get set, go. Who are you?
Hi, who am I is the real question, to be or not to be. So I'm Peggy Gillespie. I created something called Family Diversity Projects, a nonprofit 30 years ago when I was young and had brown hair. And we made an exhibit called Love Makes a Family, that became a book, and it's still traveling. It's an exhibit that goes all over to schools and colleges and libraries. And then the latest one we did was Authentic Selves on Trans and Non-Binary People and Their Families. And so what I do is I run that project. I try to raise money for it. I try to get it into every possible school and library and workplace and house of worship and corporation, and try to have a life. And I also am the mom of a grown child who's queer, and I am in a partnership with my partner, Jill. So that's who I am.
Yeah. That's amazing. You got it all in. You did go slightly over, but I get it. You have a lot to get in. Yeah. You have a full life that we have to talk about. And you are such an advocate. Like, you are really a change maker, Peggy. And it's inspiring to hear of all of the things you've done just on your own, just because you had a personal mission. That's what it feels like.
Yes, that's true. I would agree with that, that it was a personal mission that then became a sort of political. The political is personal, as they say, and the personal is political. So
right. And in these times, like, everything feels very political. And
yes, everything is.
Everything is political. It's true. So I just reconnected with you. So I interviewed you a couple years ago for one of our Pride Extravaganza. You're back in the Pride Extravaganza, by the way.
Oh, well, that's good. I always like extravaganzas.
Extravaganza. No. You have to sing it. Yeah, you're back in this extravaganza. But the last time I interviewed you, you were doing all this amazing work, and you have had this amazing life. But you didn't get you hadn't gotten the accolades that you just got. So I reconnected with you. I ran into you at the Family Equality Gala in New York City, and you were being honored, Peggy. They honored you. You got an award. You stood up on the podium. You said an amazing speech. Your speech was so heartfelt and funny and sweet. It was a really wonderful moment of the night. And I want you to know that. And I want you to give yourself a pat on the back, because that was a really special moment of that night.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I will admit that lots of people said that. And like one of the guys that organized the gala said, you know, you were the star of the night. And I danced. Like, I got up there, Bill T. Jones had introduced me, and he was sitting with me, and I said, dance when you get up there. And he did. And then when I got up, people had given me a standing ovation because they had made a film, short film about me. Yeah. And I was like, I've never had a standing ovation before. And then I just started dancing. I hope well.
It was amazing. I haven't seen it. It was so good.
And then it just, you know, inspired me, because they made me write this speech, thank you speech. And it had to be 4 minutes or less. And I must have spent 40 hours working on this speech, because they would keep cutting it even the night before. Oh, we have to cut everybody. You need to get rid of this joke and don't say that. And then they had a teleprompter, which I've never used. I always just speak. And
I've never used a teleprompter. I've always wondered what it's like.
It wasn't so bad. I mean, it gave me the framework. I could see it and stuff. But then I just had to add in a few of the things that they had made me cut. And it just did come out of my heart, because I was so grateful. You know, some people are like that fake humble thing, like, oh, I don't really deserve this. Well, I felt like I've worked really damn hard to try to do this, you know, not because I wanted an award, but because I want to change things. I want people to love everybody, you know, simple little thing like that, and accept everybody and celebrate everybody. But I felt like, wow, you know, I'm 77 years old. It felt good. Like, I felt like, yeah, I worked hard.
You deserved that. And everybody in the room felt that too. Everybody felt that you really, truly deserved this. You have been working your tail off. Like, you don't get you haven't gotten accolades for it. I mean, people love the things you create, and it keeps going. So of course it's running. It feels to me sort of like my podcast. I keep doing it, but it's not like anybody acknowledges me, except the listeners, right?
Yeah. But are the people that showed our exhibits over the years, you know, I get these wonderful letters and appreciation, but it was like something I wanted more people to know about what we're doing, so that it would spread even way further. And also, being old now, I was just like, we need to find some young person people to take over some of this, or I'm even hoping Family Equality may want to join with us, because it's It has been a two-women operation for 30 years, me and the photographer Gigi Kaiser, who still at 81 packs these 100-pound boxes and gets UPS to ship them and organizes all of that. And then I do everything else, you know, the fundraising and the scheduling and all that. But we've just done it. You know, we sometimes get a student intern. I have one that I just hired. But overall, it's just been the two of us plugging away. So that was why it felt particularly good. And of course, the room was 1,100 people, and many of them were like A-list movie stars and Broadway stars.
There were Broadway stars performing. There were Broadway stars there. Kelly Ripa and her husband, I should know his name. Kelly and Mark were there. Yes. I saw her. She walked past me and I said, I don't watch the show, but I know she's on that. I said, she walked past me. I go, I'll see you in the morning, Kelly.
You're right. No, it was, like, oh, okay. It was so weird. Like, you know, it was like these people. I know Jessica Lange walks in and says, congratulations, takes my hand. She loved to talk. You know, it was like Jessica Lange's been a hero. But the one person that I most connected with there, who I hope will help, because she offered to, after my speech, Katie Couric beckoned me over. And I think she's mm-hmm. won an award from Family Equality. She has done a lot of work with trans issues, and I just heard her interview with Laverne Cox. Anyway, she brings me over, gives me a big hug and says, I want to help you promote your work. And I'm like, great. I really, that would make all the difference in the world. And then I happened to, this is just a personal story, is like we were holding hands and I said, you know, I just want to tell you, I was a first year and second year's housemate of your sister, Emily. She had this wonderful sister who became a state senator, but then died in her 50s from cancer. And Emily, you know, I knew her. We were 18 and 19 years old. And I just said, your sister was so wonderful. And she brought her husband over and said, Peggy knew Emily. And then she left and she said, you know, my other sister, Kiki, went to Smith too. And she said, and then I applied. And I was rejected. And she said, Smith College has lived to regret that. But we really had this warm connection. So I spent a lot of time, just wrote her letter, sent her the copy of Authentic Selves. Her husband said, you ought to write for our daily newsletter something about it. And I, you know, I haven't heard back yet, but I'm praying that she will follow up, because she could bring this work into so many more homes and
so much more homes and schools and institutions and all the things.
Exactly.
We're all sending up a wish to Katie Couric. Come on, Katie Couric. Let's go.
Katie,
let's go.
We love you. I do love her. Do. I was a subscriber to her newsletter for the last few years. She's a remarkable human being with a big heart.
That's awesome. So you got all these accolades for the 30 years of work you've done for the LGBTQIA community, which I like to call us now. That's my new thing. I like to make it sound fancy.
That does sound fancy.
Let's go back to the beginning. Let's take it to the moment. And I know we've talked about this, but I want a refresher. Let's take it to the moment when you had the spark to create the first thing you created. Like, where did it come from and why?
My late husband and I were the adoptive parents of at this point, a three-year-old. We had gotten Jay right from at 1 month old. And Jay was multiracial, part half black, half white, you know, with who knows what else. I mean, Jay was the light of our lives. Like the cutest, most fun baby, slept through the night, never got sick. Wow. Walked at 7 months. This was an unusual child and still is, mm-hmm. 38 years later. Anyway, Jay was in actually Gigi Kaiser's preschool classroom or whatever. Yeah, age three.
Yeah.
And Gigi's the photographer that I wound mm-hmm. up working with. But so she told me this story. Jay brought her brown doll that a friend of ours had given her at Christmas back to school. And Jay was very light skinned, somewhat similar to me. And curly hair like mine. So Jay wasn't necessarily recognized as a black individual by people. They just knew she was multiracial.
Yeah. And Jay had two white parents.
That's right. So a kid in the classroom said to her, why did you bring that doll with the ugly skin color? You know, and it was, you know, a dark brown doll named Peaches, and Jay brought the doll home. I don't remember if Jay told me or just the teacher, Gigi, and never brought the doll back in. Oh. And so I, you know, I used to tell, when I would tell this story to people, I would say, you know, you probably assume that this child who said that was from a very openly racist home. But the child, Amelia, was the daughter of my best friends. And so it was like, okay, so something, you know, it's not like the kid was a racist at age three. No, right. It was just that had absorbed that lesson that dark-skinned people were not good. Or so I don't, you know, I don't know exactly what, but it made me think.
This is really fascinating to me because I find, because this was your best friend. So it's not like in the house, they right. were saying terrible things about darker skin colors. It's not like this was like the rhetoric in the home. And I think that happens a lot because it's something that's just not discussed in white right. homes right. at all. That's and I think right. you're gonna get to this, but like, and I think that's the issue. And I think that it's so important that all families talk about all families and all identities so that there aren't these weird moments, because my kids have these weird moments with their friends and people I know and I love.
Right. It's, exactly.
It's the white supremacist society we live in to be.
That's exactly what it real. Is. Right. It's the same, or the homophobic. I mean, there's one person switching head, but in Love Makes a Family, he was driving his, he was the soccer coach or something, and driving these, his son, gay dad, and the kids in the back of the car were going, that's so gay, or so-and-so so gay.
Yeah,
and, right. And the father turns around and says, do you know what that means? And they go, like, no. And he says, well, I'm gay. And, mm-hmm. you know, and sort of explained it. And they're like, oh, okay. So it's just, yeah, it's just in the water we drink is what Bill yeah. T. Jones said to me once about racism. Like I said, have you experienced a lot of racism in your dance life years and years ago? And he's like, it's the air we breathe. It's mm-hmm. not, you know, I was fairly naive at the point. So the same thing goes with the brown doll. Made me think, okay, we're two white parents. We thought we were very, there wasn't the term woke, but that, you know, we were very woke at the time and thought we would, you know, love would be the thing. It wouldn't really matter the race. You know, we, you know, mm-hmm. that we would bring Jay into, in, expose Jay. We were part of a multiracial family group. We weren't like just keeping her in a white world. So I thought, well, maybe if I interviewed a bunch of family, other multiracial families, and especially teenagers and stuff, I would learn how better to prepare my kid for facing a world where racism is rampant and, you know, a white supremacist society. And so I thought, oh, maybe I'll make an exhibit. And I put a note in the school newspaper or whatever we had and said, anybody take photos? And then Gigi, the teacher who had told me that and was my friend then, said, I'm a photographer. So we just made this project called it Check, like a check mark, other portraits of multiracial families. Because at the time there was no multiracial category. So people had to just say, I'm other.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Later, we changed it to Of Many Colors, portraits of multiracial families. And we interviewed, you know, about 25, 30 families locally and took photos and had a big opening. And like hundreds of people came and crying. We had no clue. And then we put it in all the elementary schools in Amherst, where we lived. And it was so popular and so appreciated. And we did panels with the teenagers and some of the parents in all the elementary schools. Then I'm a journalist, so I wrote an article for the Boston Globe magazine, Sunday magazine, and it was on the cover.
They as you do.
Gigi's.
Yeah. You know, as Gigi's. You do, Peggy.
Anyway, so then people started saying, could we have the exhibit? So we'd say, yeah, you know, we made cardboard box and shipped it to different places and asked people to donate $50. And that's where it began. We weren't Family Diversity Projects yet because I didn't really know what a nonprofit was until I learned we needed some grant money. And
just from a spark, a spark of seeing something, some inequity, you know, in your kid's class, it became this huge. And now 30 years later, it's a huge movement. And yours. And the thing that is also striking to me is that it's still needed.
Yeah.
that we do right. feel like we have come so far, and we have,
right.
to be clear, we have come so far. But when you think about the fact that your work is still so needed, it is really eye-opening, like, to see like how much we still very much need it and how much work it takes to just chisel away one little tiny facet of the inequities in our society.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's the sad thing, I thought I'd be out of a job long ago. Like, you know, we made 8 different exhibits, but it seems like we're always needed. And then people are still booking the Of Many Colors one. So it's old, but it's still traveling. And
right.
I'd say that, you know, every school, I mean, when people call me to ask about showing an exhibit, I'll just say, you know I sound like a used car salesperson, but every single place our exhibits have gotten rave reviews. I mean, it's just letter after letter. And I've observed it in some classrooms. I've gotten to see how things go or lead discussions with kids. But it's so simple. It's just photographs and stories, personal stories. But it has touch. It can touch the littlest kids to the old people.
Storytelling is what is a change maker. Storytelling is a change maker. And seeing, like, representation, I say it all the time, representation matters so much. Above all else, representation matters. So you're putting together representation and storytelling, and you're bringing it to the people to see. Like, it's like brilliant. It's genius. And that's why it works, right? And it's so simple.
Right. I mean, and, you know, a lot of people over the years have followed our methods. You know, I get calls from people like, I'm thinking about doing something about gay families in Florida or whatever. And, you know, do you mind? Or, you know, and I'm like, no, the more, you know, like, the more representation, the more showing these stories. And I mean, obviously the internet wasn't in existence when I started all this. So hard to believe, but true.
I know.
And so these were the ways, you know, again, it's like books are good because people can hold them and keep them in their houses. People have told me, like, the Love Makes a Family book changed their lives. They saved their lives. Some, you know, grown-up people that got it when they were teenagers. But going into your school, in particular, school or church or temple or anything, and seeing families that are like yours, or learning about families that are all kinds, and learning about respect, because most of these kids from LGBTQ families, you know, never saw those images on their school walls or never got it. It wasn't talked about. And now, of course, with all the censorship and anti-quote DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, a lot fewer people are going to be able to, kids particularly, and teachers, be able to learn about these kinds of families.
It's really important. And I got my kids' elementary school to put up stuff for Pride Month. Like, it took my daughter, we were on the bus to school one morning, and it was June, and we're looking at all the Pride decorations throughout the city. I live in New York City, so there's a lot of, you know, and this was years ago when corporations were, like, really all about decorating. They're not doing it so much this year. You know, and we're looking at the decorations and noticing the rainbows, and my daughter turned to me really sad and said, "Mom, how come my school doesn't decorate for Pride?" And I was like, "Oh, do you want them to? It's at their school's in Chelsea, by the way."
Oh.
She was like, "Yes, I do." And so we wrote an email to the principal right then and there. And then shortly thereafter, there was a flag up, right? And then every year now, they put the flag up and they put some, like, little flags around the school. And there's, like, a teeny tiny section of L'Égyptéquois family books in the library that's, like, hidden in the back. And that's the extent of it. That's what they get. So my kids don't see their families represented at their school, even though there are a lot of same-sex families at our school. Like, we're in Chelsea.
Yeah.
There's a good number of us. But I think the teachers do their best to kind of weave it in. They're good with it, but it's not in the overall kind of, I don't want to say curriculum, but I can't think of the right word, but it's not, like, it's not in the air they breathe.
Right. Yes, right? Exactly. Yeah.
And it's even like, you know, like the flag they had outside the school that hung up outside the school is outdated. So I brought new flags to the principal the other day. Like, here you go. This is an updated one, you know. But it really is like, it's taxing a little bit, right? And yeah. So that's why work like yours is really so important, just to kind of wake everybody up, not to make them woke, but just to right. wake folks up to see yeah. how important this representation is,
right,
I guess.
Right. And being able to talk about it openly. I mean, now when our exhibits go into schools, or I think we created a whole bunch of curriculum over the years. So they should bring one of our exhibits to your school in Chelsea, seriously.
And I've wanted to, and our school is not, it's like pulling teeth just to get the flags up. Not even kidding. It's really interesting. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Okay, as we all know, and as we've been talking about in this here episode, families are created in so many beautiful ways. And one of those ways is by using donor sperm. And if you're thinking about starting your family the donor sperm way, I have a promo code for you at California Cryobank. California Cryobank has been lovingly helping and serving the LGBTQIA community for about 50 years and counting, and they offer wonderful resources to our community to help us on our family building journeys. I use California Cryobank to create my family, and I, of course, am extremely happy with it. And I know you will be too. So what you're going to do is you're going to go to cryobank.com. You're going to use code QueerFam25. That's QueerFam25. And that's going to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog, where you get to see pictures of the donors. You get to see descriptions of the donors. You get medical histories of the donors. You get essays from the donors. You get voice recordings from the donors. There's so many things that you can see about these donors to find your special person that's going to help you create this family. So just go to cryobank.com, use code QueerFam25, and let's start making those babies, and then you can come tell me about them. Okay, let's get back to the episode.
Love is love.
From Of Many Colors, we went on to do Love Makes a Family on LGBT families. That was 1995 or so.
What prompted you to create that one? I'm curious.
That was more almost an accidental thing. We had a couple lesbian moms and a gay dads in the Of Many Colors. Mm-hmm. Nobody had made any fuss about it. And, you know, we lived in a very liberal bubble area, Northampton, Amherst.
Western Mass.
Western Mass, yes. So so Gigi actually said, you know, there are different issues in the lesbian and gay families that maybe let's do another one. Because mm-hmm. the first one was so popular. And I said, oh, great, great. You know, I wound up calling it Love Makes a Family. We made it. We called the principal, said, guess what? We have another exhibit. And then all of a sudden we get a phone call from the superintendent of schools in Amherst saying, you can't show an exhibit on gay and lesbian families to elementary schools, maybe mm-hmm. high school. It's way too young. They'll think about sex. That was right. his main thing. And so, you know, so anyway, it caused that huge controversy that I'm sure I talked to you about and, you know, at some point.
In the last episode, everybody listened to that last episode. And that's a thing. That's a real, and it's to this day, that's a thing.
Right, right. And so it went, you know, went to court, five families suing the schools. We won in federal court. And then it caused a controversy in Cambridge, which was documented in this great film called It's Elementary, Teaching Gay Issues in Elementary Schools by the Academy Award-winning filmmaker Deborah Chasnoff. And it was it's really worth seeing and seeing if you can get your teachers at your school to look at it, because it's a very important film. It shows five or six different situations around the country, but it included our exhibit in a Cambridge elementary school, which caused a controversy. All that to say, after all these controversies and schlepping the photographs and going to endless meetings at schools, Gigi and I decided to make an exhibit called In Our Family, Portraits of Many Kinds of Families. And that included, like, quote, you know, every possible type we could fit in a box. But we overloaded it with same-sex parents, but they didn't necessarily represent like there was one couple that represented the foster family, two women, and then another black and white male couple with the kids represented the multiracial family. So maybe out of 20 photographs, there were six of them. Mm-hmm. So, but it was a much easier sell to schools. And so a school like yours say, oh yeah, we want to celebrate all kinds of families, and they would order it. Then they would often on the phone say, there are going to be some normal families in this exhibit, right? And then I would say, that's that, you know, I would always be very lovely. I said, that's the question we want people to explore. What do you mean by a normal family? And then it would always get down to generally two white parents with two kids and a dog or a cat or something. And I said, there's many, you know, like if somebody in that family was deaf, would you call it a normal family? Mm. Yes. And we had people that were blind, people that had, you know, I said, what family doesn't have, quote, something different that is not so different? I mean, we all have differences. And they go, oh, okay. Or maybe there's a black family that's mother, father, two kids and a dog, and they came from, they're immigrants. Or, anyway, so.
Yeah.
So that one's still very popular, that exhibit.
That's great. And this is why you're the bomb, Peggy, because you found ways to make sure that everyone was represented. When you knew that certain communities might push back on certain things. But what does normal mean? I love that. What does normal mean?
We had authentic selves on trans and non-binary people at a local, it's a Jewish day school near me. So they asked me to come and talk to the kids. So they had the exhibit all over the library. And they were third, fourth, fifth, sixth graders who came. And I asked that question, what does normal mean to you? And these were very, very smart kids. Like they, I never hardly had to say another word for my whole talk. Like, I hate the word normal. We're all normal. We're all unique. It doesn't, and on like that. Or, you know, then I'd have another little kid saying, my mom's trans and I'm non-binary. And they're, you know, eight or 9 years old. And I'm totally accepted here. And everybody uses they, them pronouns. And then another one would, no, me, you know, I'm also non-binary. And it was like, it just went off from that question that there's nothing, I mean, that normal means all of us. Like we're all normal people. You know, so like even, you know, people now talk about neurodivergence as being like really promoting the concept, which is a true one, that it's a different way of being. It doesn't make it, you know, bad. And that's what people do, is they take something that's different and they turn it into something scary and bad. And once you get to know somebody, unless they're a mean, horrible person, whatever, whoever they are, then they're like, why not celebrate them? That's what I don't understand. Like, why is there so much hatred right now of people that all they want to do is love and be loved and be taken, you know, be accepted for who the authentic selves that they are? That's what everybody wants. So, what, you know, like there's plenty of people, if you want to hate people, you know, there's people causing, you know, violence and horrible things in the world, all over the world, including our government. And, you know, like, why do they target? I mean, everybody's question, like, why target trans and non-binary people or lesbian and gay people for anything? You know, I mean, you know, same as racism, because there's melanin that's different in your skin.
Right.
It's weird to me. I've never understood it all these years. It's more baffling to me.
And that's why everybody needs a little dose of Peggy Gillespie, because everything you say is so true. And I'm one of the woke people who 100% fully agrees with you.
Right.
And to think that there's anybody who could disagree with you, Peggy, is mind-boggling. I just feel like if only the powers that be were, like the media, were to take this message and to take things that you create and things that other queer folks and all the marginalized folks of the world create, this world would be woken up. Yeah. And not to say they'd be woke, because everybody can have their own opinions and their own whatever. But it would wake us up to understanding that humanity is humanity. And it's all normal and it's all unique, just like what you're saying. And we need to celebrate the difference is in the normalcy.
Right, exactly. And why, you know, like why, you know, somebody, I don't even like to say his name, but, you know, the horrible leader, evil, you know, says there's only two genders. Well, you know, and it's like, excuse me, that isn't, you know, science. I mean, not that they care about science, but it's just
right.
Like, it's, you know, everybody always says that if you're left-handed, well, that's not, quote, normal in terms of it's percentage-wise, or you have red hair, that's not percentage-wise
right.
equal to people like brown or gray or whatever.
But it exists.
Yeah, exactly.
It exists.
And there are many intersex people. There's people, you know, and so what if somebody, like they say, well, it's just something, it's like they're choosing this, or they can, I remember when Love Makes a Family first went into one of, well, actually my kids' school, there was a very nice family, very religious, who said to me they were worried that their five-year-old, who was in the preschool there, kindergarten, would see the exhibit and become gay. Like, and I'm like, let me tell you, like, that is not how it works. But even if it was something one were to choose, like, I think I'm going to be trans and, you know, or non-binary or whatever. Like, so what? Like,
right.
Some of the people I interviewed said, like, why is it we didn't choose? But if we did, why can't we just, like, you choose what color nail polish you put on? Or
like, so what?
Yeah.
Just so what? Mind your business.
Right. And there's so much going on that needs attention. You know, children who are starving. I mean, I could go on and on, but.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, they want to focus on what's between our, underneath our pants, right?
Right. It's exactly.
Kind of, it's just insane.
It's insane.
And, you know, and there is that argument that has been made about, you know, left-handed people up until, I don't know what year it was, the 70s, were forced to write with their right hands because you can't be left-handed. It's evil. So people like equate that to the whole transgender article too now.
Right.
You're still a left-handed person. You're always left-handed, but you train yourself to live in the world as a right-handed person.
Yeah. Yes.
But at your core, you're always the same. You're left-handed. And if they let you just thrive and be who you wanted to be, who knows what kind of things you would have created with your left hand. I don't know. Like, I'm taking it too far, but like.
No, that's right.
It's so ridiculous. And who cares? Why do you care?
Why do they care? I don't know. I mean, you know, it's like I look at, like, I'll just show, you know,
the
pictures.
The authentic selves.
Yeah. And they're, you know, this lovely, you know, these families on the, I mean, I know this family, they're local. And this family, she's a cinematographer. They now have two kids. Like, all they are is adoring, loving people. And to think that, I mean, so what if the girl being held was assigned male at birth, but knew all along, you know, and even suffered in this very, very wonderful family because afraid to share that for a very long time. And it's like we create so much suffering. I mean, I teach mm-hmm. Buddhist meditation, mindfulness meditation, and there was a statement that they quoted from the Buddha, whether it's real or not. He was just a guy, but he said, we live, you know, with 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows, but we can free ourselves from suffering because it's like we create so much suffering. And that's what this is, as far as I'm concerned. It's creating, it's like there's plenty of suffering. There's illness, there's dying, there's horrible wars and killing of people. And why do we want to create suffering for a bunch of people that only just want to live as healthy?
We all just want to live. It's to deflect from the atrocities they're committing. That's what it is. It's deflection. Yeah. It's smoke and mirrors. It's disgusting. And to the argument that if my five-year-old sees this exhibit, I'm afraid they're going to want to be gay. I watched straight media my whole life, and it didn't turn me straight.
Right, exactly. Or like most LGBTQ people came from straight parents, you know, because
exactly.
if they say, like, lesbians shouldn't have children because they'll be gay. Excuse me? Like,
yeah. I'm pretty sure my kids are both straight. So right. I forgive them for it, but,
you're
know.
Right. My kids told me, I didn't want to come out to you because I was afraid you'd throw a party.
It's amazing. Like, come on, we're the best parents out there. Let's be real. So you started out with a husband. Let's just go into your kind of your little journey, if we could. I know we talked about it in the last episode, but I had so much fun talking with you about it in all your wild days in the 70s, Peggy.
Oh, did I tell you a lot?
You're a little bit of a wild child.
Okay.
From what I recall.
Right.
But because you're still with your girlfriend, which I think when we first talked, this was new.
Yes. Well, we've been together, I think it's 9 years on April Fool's Day.
Oh, so it wasn't that new.
Probably, maybe 6 or 7, whatever.
Yeah.
But I had my late husband died when my kid was about to turn 13.
Oh, sorry.
That was 2000, so 25 years ago. And the next 20 years, I had two relationships, shortish ones with women, one with a guy. Nothing about being a guy. Just, sorry, every time I think of him, I go, ugh.
I feel you, Peggy.
Right, that was 6 months or something. And then mostly by the time after that, the last relationship with the woman for 6 months, I was like done. I was, I don't know, 60 something, 64. And I was like, no more. I've had enough with relationships. You know, I mean, I have all this great group of friends and don't need one. And then after 4 years of not dating or doing anything, my best friend, actually, oddly enough, Nan, who is the mother of that child, Amelia, who told Jay that the brown doll was ugly color. Anyway, yeah. Nan challenged me to go on one date. And I was like, oh, God. And we had this history of every time one of us would wind up with somebody, the other one would break up with somebody or they'd die or something. So I said, well, you know, if I find somebody, then your relationship is over. You'll be breaking up. But she said, no, one date. So that day, Match.com, I had joined it to meet that awful guy years before. And they still every day would try to entice you to like send pictures of these are your matches. So usually I just, erase it, of course. And this day I looked and Jill had just joined. And so there was this new person who was very cute and wrote really cute things and things that I could relate to. So I thought, all right, I'll pay the damn $30 or whatever so I can write her a letter. And I did. And, we talked for about a month or so back and forth. And finally she came. We were both nervous the night before. We were showing pictures of each other, like, should I wear this? Oh my God. I'd send her photos. These are the worst photos of me that you could have, it's very different from usually the way one dates, but we were like, so she came and it's like we've been together ever since.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Where can everybody find you? And also, how can everybody support you? Because this is a nonprofit and it's a two-person team. And I'm sure funding is essential. So how can everybody, where can they find you and where can they support you? Because it's important.
It's so crucial because every year I have to do this annual fund and pray. And so I'm still waiting for somebody to just say, here's the $1 million. You never have to worry again. You're endowed and I can hire young people to do all the things I can't do. Right.
Yeah.
But, and there are people out there that could do that, could realize the power and the implication of supporting this work. So I'm hoping that happens, but anything from $5, on giving, donating to Family Diversity Projects, which has its own website, familydiversityprojects.org with an S, Family Diversity Projects S. And that's my email too, familydiversityprojects@gmail.com. They'll get that if they go to the website and they can see all 8 of our exhibits. We have one, by the way, on immigration called Building Bridges.
Look at you. You just keep going.
Well, that one I started and we created the day that T was elected the first time, the Orange Menace. So it was just like, and so that one is also very, very good and very needed. And we have them on disabilities, all the, there's 8 of them. And
it's amazing.
So we want people to donate, help us find donors that really would help us to be able to continue this beyond my tenure on this planet. And and then we also need people who will bring the exhibits, you know, spread the books. Like, let's say, if you can imagine, you buy your copy of Authentic Selves, you give it to a friend as well who could use it, or you give it to your school library. But what if you bought 20 copies, if you had the money, and sent it to some politicians? You know, whether it's sending them to people who already are aware, like AOC, but saying, spread this word, or, you know, Sarah McBride. And Sarah is the one who is the first openly trans woman. Here she is. And
look at that.
That's her nieces. And Sarah, you know, as soon as she got to Congress, that horrible other congresswoman, I forget her name, Nancy.
The bathroom
somebody.
Lady. Right. The lady who's obsessed with bathrooms.
Let's she can't.
We don't need to say her dumb name anyway.
No, right. And on and on, you know, and people, like, they call her, and Mr. McBride, or, you know. Here's another good photo.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah, we all know Sarah McBride.
So we want people to spread the word, get our exhibits. You can bring them to everywhere from... We just ship them, and people will say, does it cost a lot of money? Well, it costs about $300 or so dollars to ship round trip. So we ask people to cover that and then to make a donation. Now, some people, you know, we have private schools give $2,000-$3,000 for a month of the exhibit. We have a little church that might do a collection plate, send us $500. We have another public school that has no money, and we subsidize the shipping. You know, so we never turned anyone away based on finances, but we just, of course, hope that we make enough money and get enough donations so that we can keep that policy going forever. So that, you know, if, let's say your school say, well, we'll show the all family exhibit, we'll do that, but we don't have any budget for anything like that. Then I would be saying to you on the phone, yeah, you can have the exhibit, we'll ship it to you.
That's good to know. Everybody needs to reach out. I want to send the book to, like, all the members on the school board that have recently introduced some anti-trans stuff, which is crazy. Right. In Chelsea, like Chelsea.
God. It's hard to believe. Just send them to the High Line and maybe they'll see enough diversity.
I mean, it's insane. So everybody, like, get your thinking wheels going, and how can you help to amplify the work of the Family Diversities Projects?
And we're updating Love Makes a Family, which we've just done, to be, you know, because we did it in the 1990s, and we're adding families from Authentic Selves and from We Have Faith LGBT clergy exhibit. So we're trying to make it come right up to the present. And somebody at that gala said to me, we talked for a long time, said, I'm going to fund your next book. I don't have the money, but I'm going to get the funding. But I haven't figured out how to reach this person. It's Jessica wearing a red dress. Jessica kept saying,
"Okay, Jessica wearing a red dress. Right. Reach out to Peggy, please."
Right, right. And also went to Smith, so we had this whole big connection.
Okay, Jessica from Smith.
Right. So anyway, Love Makes a Family is traveling now a lot, and we just sent it to this corporation, to three of their offices: New York City, Philadelphia, and Houston. So they go you know, we'll send it anywhere.
It can go anywhere. And it's an exhibit that the school will just put up. It's simple, I'm sure. I just put together the book fair at my kid's school. I just helped out to open it all up and put it out. It's very simple. I'm sure yours is just like that.
Yeah. It comes in a box. It's very, people can put it up in a fancy museum. Like the Authentic Selves, trans and non-binary one, was in the El Paso Museum of History for a month. But then it would be in a tiny little church, you know, against, hung up or stuck up against book stands or on easels, or, you know.
In your school library, in your school lobby, sky's the limit. So
exactly. And we even have a slideshow on the website that shows all these different kinds of venues and, you know, how people can hang them up. And we talk people through any situation. It's very easy.
I love it. Yeah. And you're there to help. Everybody go check them out, and let's amplify this. Let's make it even bigger, because the more it's out, the more we are out there, the more all of these folks that are criminalized are out there for all of us to see, the less they can criminalize us.
Exactly. And, right? And you know, this government that lets out criminals from our jails and then makes criminals.
Fake criminals.
It's got to stop it. Get out on the streets, you know, do whatever. Everybody's got to do something, whatever it is. You know, I mean, it's like I don't do a lot of marching anymore. I'm going to have my hip replaced this year in October. So I can't do that kind of stuff. But I keep doing this and that's the best I can do.
You're doing your part, Peggy. Don't sell yourself short. It's okay if you can't march. We got you. Okay. We got you covered there. Oh my God. This has been such a joy. And I'm always happy to talk to you. And it was just so serendipitous when we ran into each other at the gala. But I'm here for you. If you ever want to amplify something, get something out there, my platform is here for you. I believe in what you're doing. And I think you're pretty awesome.
Well, I think you are too. And I think, you know, it's great that you do this work and amplify everybody's stories. And, you know, you must be a fabulous mom. I tell your seven-year-old that he should be very proud of you.
I'll tell him that. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm a good mom some days. Other days, not so much, but that's normal.
That's normal. I can tell you that.
Yes. Peggy, this has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me on again. I appreciate it very, very much.
Queer Family Podcast.
Before we say goodbye, I just want to say one last thank you to our sponsor, California Cryobank. What you're going to want to do is use code QueerFam25 to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Let's go. Let's go. Thank you, California Cryobank.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
From the podcast that brought you to each of the last lesbian bars in the country and back in time through the sapphic history that shaped them, comes a brand new season of Cruising Beyond the Bars. This is your host, Sarah Gabrielli, and I've spent the past year interviewing history-making lesbians and queer folks about all kinds of queer spaces, from bookstores to farms to line dancing and much more.
For 11 years, every night women slept illegally on the common.
We would move down to the West Indies to form a lesbian nation.
Meg Kristen coined the phrase women's music, but she would have liked to say it was lesbian music.
And that's kind of the origins of the Combahoover Collective.
You can listen to Cruising on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes air every other Tuesday starting February 4th.